listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. The case heard today in the U.S. Supreme Court, Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Some people are saying this is a big one. This is one of those landmark cases. Now, does anyone know how the Supreme Court will decide? We know what they've decided in the past with similar issues before them, but of course, that's no guarantee. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court case. Sharif Girgis joins us on this Tuesday afternoon. He earned his law degree at Yale Law School and a PhD. He's a PhD candidate in philosophy at Princeton. He's author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled The Christian Baker's Unanswered Legal Argument, Why the Strongest Objections Fail, and co-author of an opinion piece for the New York Times titled A Baker's First Amendment Rights. Sharif, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What is the biggest misconception about Masterpiece Cake Shop v. CCRC?
I think the biggest misconception is the idea that this is about a right to discriminate, that it's about whether Jack Phillips, an evangelical Christian baker, can say, oh, I don't serve your kind here to people who are gay. It's not like that at all. Actually, he's willing to serve even the very couple in this case anything off the shelf, anything they wanted for any occasion, except for a wedding, because it's not about the customer. It's about the message, which was to affirm that same-sex relationships are marriages. He doesn't believe that, and he doesn't want to create a cake expressing that message.
What is the strongest case being made, or the strongest objection being raised on the other side of the issue, on the other side from Masterpiece Cake Shop?
I think the strongest argument was, you know, this is a case where the couple hadn't yet asked him for any particular words or symbols on the cake. They just said, hey, we're coming in for a cake for our wedding, and it was 20 seconds and the conversation was over. So for all we know, he would have been unwilling to bake them the very same cake he just sold somebody else last week. I think that's probably the strongest objection I've seen out there.
How do you respond to it?
Well, I think it's just willfully blind to context. So when you create a cake, it's not just any old cake that they're then going to happen to use in their ceremony. When you're making to order a custom cake, and all of his wedding cakes are custom cakes, for a particular occasion, and that occasion is a party, and its whole point is to say, hooray for this couple that just got married. Well, that cake is going to bear that message, whether it just uses a festive design or also has words and symbols. And if that's a message you can't affirm, you shouldn't be forced to bake the cake that expresses it.
Some people have said, well, yes, he would be making the cake, but the message would not be his. It would be the couple's message. What's your response to that?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the people who say that also would agree that he shouldn't be forced to write words he doesn't believe in. And those two things are inconsistent. If it's not his message either way, why do you care if he's having to write words or just a picture? The fact is, everybody knows that if you make the Jewish baker inscribe a cake with a swastika, even if nobody's going to think the Jewish baker is anti-Semitic, you're forcing him to create a message. Even if it's a message someone else is going to then use for their own purposes, it's wrong to make someone play a part in the sending of that message.
Why, fundamentally, is this an issue of both speech and expression and of conscience?
Well, in a lot of the compelled speech cases, that's been the case. This is really about Jack Phillips not being forced to send a message that he both does not agree with and thinks is immoral and goes against his religious beliefs. So these things are all tied up into one. The reason he cares about not sending that message is that he doesn't believe it, and that it violates his conscience, both moral and religious, to say that he does believe it.
This is not untrod path, this notion, the kind of the flip side of the free speech clause, that not only you're free to speak, you're also free not to say anything, or you can't be compelled to say something. The Supreme Court's dealt with this several times before, hasn't it?
Over and over. And some of the cases that are the most classic Supreme Court cases that everybody loves to love. So West Virginia versus Barnett, 1943, the Supreme Court says that the state cannot force Jehovah's Witnesses to salute the flag and pledge allegiance to it, even in wartime, even when the country felt like national unity was essential to win, you know, the most important war in our history, because you can't, the state can't force you to say or do or create something that expresses a message you reject. And they had both reasons of conscience and religion in that case not to participate. The court said you can't make them. Said you can't make drivers display license plates that have the state's favored message on it, which is a libertarian kind of live free or die message, because they might not be libertarians and the state can't force them to do that. Over and over, that principle has been upheld. And the only reason that it's very seriously fraught in this case is that it's happening in the middle of a culture war.
Do we know how the case was argued today, the case for Jack Phillips?
I just read the transcript of the oral argument. I think there were two lawyers making that argument. One was Kristen Wagner with ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. She did a fantastic job arguing that this is a compelled speech case. And she argued a religious liberty angle. And then on behalf of the United States, the Solicitor General, Noel Francisco, also argued, and representing the United States, the federal government, said, look, we agree with everybody else here that anti-discrimination laws are really important, but we don't think you're going to gut them by allowing Jack Phillips to obey his conscience and not to express what he doesn't believe.
That is kind of one of the objections I think I've heard most often, and that is to allow Jack Phillips to exercise his conscience here would be a step down the slippery slope. And after all, then anything, any kind of good or service could be interpreted as expressive or speech. How do you respond?
Yeah, it's really important to address that point. So if you are being forced under anti-discrimination law to hire women as well as men, if you're being forced to serve people of all races in your restaurant, all of those things do not involve the creation of speech or artistic expression, which counts as speech under the Constitution. So none of those cases would be touched by Jack Phillips' argument here. The only cases that would are cases where you're creating something that's inherently artistic and where forcing you to create that artistic product in a certain context for a certain kind of event imposes a message on that artistic product. There's very few other cases where that would apply. It might apply, for example, in a photographer's case where the photographer doesn't want to do an engagement photo or a wedding package for a particular couple. It might apply for a florist in that situation. But if you're just coming in for an ordinary portrait, it won't apply to you. If you're just selling somebody paintings of still lifes, it won't apply to you. And certainly if you're hiring or firing, serving them other general goods and services, it won't apply to you at all.
Can you explain to us the concept being raised by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission called dignitary harm?
Yeah, I think this is something we're all going to be hearing a lot more of in the next couple of years. The Colorado Commission and lots of legal scholars on the left side of the spectrum have said, look, because even if you get to the idea that there's compelled speech here, then the inquiry just shifts. Colorado then has to show that it has a really, really strong interest, a strong public interest in forcing Jack Phillips anyway. And the question is, can it make that showing? And the only real argument that Colorado has is not material harm, because they can just go down, the couple can go down the street and get another cake. It's dignitary harm, which means to them the pain or the distress of being confronted with moral or religious ideas that you find deeply offensive. And, you know, we shouldn't deny that these interactions can be painful. They can be. But the First Amendment does not allow the government to interfere with speech to prevent people from being offended. Because if it did, that would basically gut the First Amendment. And the whole point of free speech protections is to make sure that you have the freedom to say things that other people want to stop you from saying, because they're offended by them, because they go against the majority's orthodoxies.
How important is this case?
I think it's very important. It's not just about the cakes, first of all. It's about these other artistic and expressive services for weddings in particular. And there are lots of people with conscience, not just Christians, but Orthodox Jews, Muslims, and so on. If they want to be in these businesses, and you're going to force them out of them, or at least you're going to force them out of the wedding business if you say that they have to provide services to weddings they disagree with. But it's not just about the wedding vendors. It's about the very important broader point of compelled speech. This is something that until yesterday was something, it was a real consensus ideal in American public life, that the state can't force you to say what you don't believe. And if we make an exception in this case, we're going to create a foothold for the court and for other courts to make exceptions in other cases to this really important ideal of free speech.
Did you come across any surprises from the justices' questions or comments while reading the transcript of today's oral argument?
Yeah, I suppose I was surprised by how much Justice Kennedy really seemed affected by the sense that the Colorado Commission on Civil Rights was motivated by a kind of anti-religious animus. I mean, one of the commissioners on the commission had said on the record that, oh, you know, religions have been used to justify every kind of atrocity in history, including the Nazis and this and that, and slavery and segregation. And Justice Kennedy sensed there that the commission was acting a little bit out of hostility to people of faith, and that bothers Kennedy a lot. He sees himself as a defender of liberty, including religious liberty and freedom of speech. So that may be the line that he ends up taking.
So given the complexion of the Supreme Court today, how do you expect this to come out?
You know, I think probably, I would say 60-40, it's going to come out in favor of the baker. And the real question is how wide or how narrow a ruling is it going to be? There's a way for them to write the opinion that just focuses, for example, on the evidence of malice on the commission's part. And in that case, it won't apply to too many other cases unless you've got similar facts in those cases. I think the better way, the more principled way to write the opinion would focus on the main compelled speech argument, which is you've got inherently artistic and expressive activity, a product here, forcing its creation in this particular expressive context, namely a wedding reception, is forcing a message onto it. And so we can't make you do that unless we have a really important reason for it.
Sharif Girgis earned his J.D. at Yale Law School and is a Ph.D. candidate in philosophy at Princeton. He's author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled The Christian Baker's Unanswered Legal Argument, Why the Strongest Objections Fail, and co-author of an opinion piece for The New York Times titled A Baker's First Amendment Rights. Sharif, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
You can read both of these pieces, both in Public Discourse and in the New York Times, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Carl Fikencher, the second hour of Issues Etc. on this Tuesday. Looking forward to Sunday morning, to the second Sunday in Advent, and to the Gospel reading, where John the Baptist prepares the way in Mark chapter 1.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thousands of years have gone by since Adam and Eve's first sin, when God gave them a promise of a Savior who would win. Words from the Baby King, Concordia Publishing House's new Christmas archbook. The Baby King would make a great Christmas gift for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 5 through 9. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Baby King.